Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, it's great to have you listening. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we're looking forward to actually inviting new friends that will be tuning in shortly on our latest frequency, which maybe goes on later today or probably tomorrow, very likely, 89.1 in Bismarck. So I want to just say thanks to all our listening friends over the years who have supported and prayed for this ministry as it continues to grow and expand. God's doing some great things. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls, Chris is at the phones, and yeah, what a great week last week.
Huh? Yeah, pretty amazing. Again, thank you for your overwhelming response to our fall share. We're so blessed to have you supporting what God is doing through Faith Radio, and just are grateful, overwhelmed with gratitude.
I want to say, again, thanks for wherever you're listening in, and again, maybe early this week, even maybe later today, Bismarck going on the air at 89.1 FM. And that area, Bismarck, Mandan, central North Dakota, is 100,000 or so folks plus.
Yeah, my birth state. Not that anybody cares, but
okay,
yeah,
good.
Little town of Hankinson is where I was born. So,
well, that's sort of redundant, North Dakota. I mean, little town.
Yeah.
So,
no, right.
Actually, no. The great state of North Dakota. We love North Dakota.
Absolutely.
And they're dear listeners in the Fargo area. I know there are going to be many more that are coming on board in Bismarck. So big thanks for your response during fall share and that. And we're going to spend some time. I also should mention, too, that you'll be hearing some spots for an opportunity to join God's Pit Crew. This is for hurricane relief. God's Pit Crew is an organization that just works to provide it's a bucket of relief, if you will. I guess they give people a bucket that's got a Bible, a personal note, food items, water, ready-to-eat food, crackers, utensils, personal items, toothbrush, toothpaste, etc., miscellaneous items, flashlight, toilet paper, paper towels. It's called a blessing bucket in a waterproof container. So you'll be hearing spots from that, godspitcrew.org.
Great way to get involved. Yeah.
Want to be involved in that recovery.
That need's going to be going on for quite a while, months to come. So a great opportunity.
Yeah. So thank you for that. Came across this quote. James Thurber said, "Boys are beyond the range of anybody's sure understanding, at least when they're between the ages of 18 months and 90 years."
That's about right, yeah.
And came across this. Bill Watterson said, "I don't think I'd have been in such a hurry to reach adulthood if I'd known the whole thing was going to be ad-libbed."
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk today about boys and girls. I was looking for some quotes on girls. Someone said, "A daughter may outgrow your lap, but she'll never outgrow your heart."
Oh, that's true.
And we're talking today how we can help our children grow into secure and confident adults. Secure Daughters, Confident Sons is a wonderful book written by Glenn Stanton. The subtitle is How Parents Guide Their Children into Authentic Masculinity and Femininity. And we're honored to have Glenn Stanton back with us here on Connecting Faith. Glenn's director for Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family. He does a lot of extensive lecturing and debating around the country on issues related to gender, sexuality, marriage, and parenting. And he's often sought after by national media. And he is the author of several books, Why Marriage Matters, The Ring Makes All the Difference, My Crazy Imperfect Christian Family, of which he, you know, has one with he and his wife have five children, live in Colorado Springs. We're honored to have him back on. Glenn, good to have you back with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, you bet, Neil. It's good to be with you.
This book is just, it came out a number of years ago, but it is still really full of solid information, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. We need that more than ever, I think, don't we?
Yeah, I think, more relevant, unfortunately, today than any other time, because we have this great confusion about what is gender, what does it mean to be male and female, and how do we raise little boys and girls to be good men and women?
Well, is there is the confusion just something that, those that are trying to have an agenda are trying to advance, or has there always been questions about what it is to be masculine or feminine?
You know what? No. This is a very, very new thing, and it absolutely is an agenda. I mean, I need to say, as a Christian speaker, saying this is an agenda of the left or the liberals. I mean, that's a very popular thing to say, and I'm not inclined to go that direction. But it absolutely is. I mean, we need to know that everything that we are seeing now, the whole transgender thing, this idea that gender is a spectrum and there's, 70 plus different genders, is not rooted in any type of science or objective field of study. It is all pure ideology, simply because there's a very small group of people who want the world to be that way. I mean, humanity only comes in male and female. There are no different options. But as we'll talk about, there's 101 different ways to be a good man, a good boy. There's 101 different ways to be a good girl and a good woman. But none of that changes or challenges this idea that God created them male and female.
It's hard to imagine that. I mean, we are so in love with science and technology, which we like the idea that things need to be rooted in objectivity. And yet in this area, nothing supports the confusion today, does it?
That's exactly right. I mean, many times we think of, well, there's some new scientific discovery that says that, kids can be transgender or that adults can be transgender. And there just simply isn't. This exists purely in the mind of the individual and their own self-concept of who we are. We need to know, I mean, first of all, that the research is very clear that any children who have what they call gender dysphoria, a misunderstanding of who they are as either male or female, up to from like 80 to 99% of those kids, by the time they hit puberty, identify and get in line with what their natal gender is. If they're born a little boy and they think they're a girl, by the time they hit puberty, they come to understand themselves as the little boy that they are. So, it can't be an objective, natural thing of who you are if the overwhelming majority of these kids are going to kind of straighten themselves out just by the natural process of growing. It is not an objective thing. It's a subjective thing, and it exists in the mind. And we need to know that, and we need to be able to stand against that very strongly, compassionately, but strongly as well.
And of course, to even have the discussion, the conversation, especially for early young children, just raises all sorts of questions, right? I mean, young adolescents, time of questions anyway.
Well, no, and that's exactly right. And, little boys, little girls have never been a man or a woman before, and they're not quite sure, where they're coming from. And there are sometimes little boys where they're not quite like the other boys. They're not real rough and tumble. They don't like to get sweaty. They don't like to get dirty. And, they may, and I deal with kids like this, in interactions all the time where they just think, well, I'm not like the other boys, and I'm kind of more like the girls, so I must be a girl. And then you have families, parents kind of going along with that and saying, well, if my child says he's, a little boy or a little girl, then that's exactly who it is, what my child is. And the other thing that we need to really understand here is that the good clinicians and therapists who really work with kids on this, they say it's typically not about the child themselves, but it's oftentimes about the parents and the way that the parents interact with the child. They call it the family noise that surrounds the child is usually where the problem lies, unfortunately.
Well, so over time, centuries in anthropologist studies, I mean, are there kind of a set of universal or maybe global characteristics that, boys tend to gravitate toward as well as girls? Maybe we can just talk about some of those key differences.
Well, no, and that's exactly right. And, this whole transgender idea, or that gender is a spectrum, that there are many different genders, is just absolutely brand new. I mean, human experience through the years, and as you said, through different cultures, we find that there is a constant nature of male and female. And what I love about that is that God has wired that within us. It's part of how we come out of the factory, if you will. And so we shouldn't be surprised that everywhere we go in the world at any time, even to the most remote cultures, you find similarities between men and women, male and female. I mean, first of all, it's interesting that we will tend to say, well, you know, little boys act this way and little girls act this way because culture demands that they are. But no, throughout the world, boys like to hunt. They like to fight. They like to break things. They like to dig in and explore things. Women are not likely that way. They don't like to fight. They will argue with each other and they will get jealous with one another. We find that across all cultures. They do not like to hunt as much. Now, there are women that do hunt. I mean, you look at Sarah Palin, okay, this, you know, darling of the right and the Christian community. You know, she can go out, she can shoot, but she doesn't disprove that reality that women are not likely to be the ones that will go out and hunt big game, things like that. Women, it's interesting and curiously, they are more centered around the home. They, you know, in very primitive cultures, they are the ones that will kind of tend to the smaller livestock, the garden around the house. Their interest is just simply toward the home itself. Men want to go out and do stuff out. They're the guys that will go out into the woods. You know, now we go out into the workplace. And of course, there's women who work. And you know, do wonderfully and nothing wrong with that. But it's the male inclination more than the woman inclination to go out into the world, to expand the boundaries, to explore new things. It's no surprise that we don't really have women explorers, famous women explorers. And it's not because they can't do it. It's they're just not as inclined to want to do it because they're more interested in watching things around the home. And we need to understand that that's not a lesser way of being. The home is where humanity happens. The home is where the big things happen. You think of anybody in the world that has made a real difference in the world, how they got a good start. They got a good start because their mother provided a good home for them. And, you know, that is power. It's more power than going out and earning a decent living or, you know, going out and getting the meat for the community. Mothering and womanhood is a tremendously powerful thing. But we find these differences across all cultures, and there's no culture whatsoever where we go and find people that do not fit in male and female. Or we look at the females and think, oh my goodness, I don't even recognize sort of what they're doing, or they do things more like men. Same with the men. Everywhere we go in the world, there are these human universals that men tend to be like men are in our own communities, and women tend to be like women are. There is a universal male and female nature across humanity, and God put it there.
We're going to talk more about it in the moments ahead with Glenn Stanton. Glenn's director for Family Formation Studies that focus on the family. In fact, he does a lot of writing and research. You can look for Focus Findings. You just Google that at Focus on the Family, and you'll find great articles and writings and research from Glenn. He's written several books. The one we're referencing today is called Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, How Parents Guide Their Children into Authentic Masculinity and Femininity. We've got a couple of copies of this great book to give away, and we'll do that via drawing. You can sign up for it with a phone call at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And just to give you your contact information, we'll put you in the drawing for that. And coming up in a moment, we'll talk about, you know, how we can help our daughters become secure in their sense of significance and how to inspire our sons to compete and take healthy risks, all that, and your questions, all just ahead on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've known it all along, but even more so today. We need to understand gender matters in how we raise our children. And Glenn Stanton has researched and written a wonderful book on that topic. Speaks on this issue and many others relating to sexuality, marriage, parenting, but certainly issues of gender. Glenn's director for family formation studies at Focus on the Family, written a great book called Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. And we had this kind of a little opening summary in our first segment. You talked about some of the differences between girls and boys. Touched on a few. Boys tend to they hunt, they fight, they explore, they break things. Say a few things about some key characteristics of girls, Glenn.
Well, it's interesting because girls, just are inherently more relational. You see, girls tend to interact in groups more. And they are about relationships. They want to seek those things out. It's interesting that, even in primitive cultures, you see as the women work, they're working, but they're talking. They're connecting with one another. It's, the old phrase, the sewing circle. Men, they want to work and they will work close to each other, but as they're working, it's kind of like, don't bother me, don't talk, I got work to do. It's goal-oriented that way. So little boys are more inclined to want to do and accomplish. Girls are more likely to want to chat and connect. And again, we tend to think because we make these differences between male and female that one is better than the other. No, they're both just different ways of doing humanity in that way. It's interesting that boys will be more likely to take chances. We have to, more likely control and give advice to our boys of, don't just dive in and do that. Or, you can't just go running out in the street. Girls are not as likely to take those chances. They're not as likely to get into trouble. The example of that is who pays more in car insurance and health insurance, boys and girls. Boys do, men do, because they're more likely to be racing their motorcycles fast and, taking chances. And that website, not that we look at it as Christians, but dude, hold my beer. You just see guys just doing stupid things because they're risk takers.
That is so true. And we're all flashing back to moments when we've maybe said something similar. So, but it's interesting that risk taking, initiative, competition seems to be kind of downplayed and penalized in boys today. Are girls, are there the same equal areas where maybe, we downplay some of the girls' natural God-given characteristics?
Well, now, see, that's interesting. Speaking of the girls, yes, competition and kind of going for it with the boys is downplayed. But if you have a girl where she's just aggressive, good for her. But we tend to celebrate that. We don't allow ourselves to say, honey, bring it down a little bit. It's going to be fine. Both, the competitiveness and going for it and not being the culture where everybody gets a trophy, we need to encourage our boys to go for it, to take chances. And that even, means for not just the rough and tumble. But you have you may have a young boy who he likes art, he likes music. Encourage him to, I want you to be the best cellist in the world. Go for it. You can do it. You've got it within you. You're a great little artist. Expand your opportunities. See what skills you've got. Go for it. We can encourage those kinds of, take a chance, go up to the next level, and it doesn't just need to be sports. It can be all kinds of things, and we need to do those kinds of things. For my girls, I've got four girls and one boy. I encourage them, and I challenge them, but I see that, security and safety and comfort is more of a need for them. My oldest daughter, she's 23. She just started her first professional job and she's traveling a lot. She went on her second trip just yesterday and she's nervous about going to Southern California and driving in the traffic and things like that and being safe. And so I have to encourage her, but she's different than her brother. Her brother would just jump in, not be scared of any of it. But I need to recognize that her as a girl, she has different wiring. She has different fears. She has different interests in those ways. And so to honor those sorts of things and not try to make my little girl like a boy and not try to make my little boy like a girl.
Can you say, well, we got about 5 minutes here, 4 minutes before break, but talk more about how do we encourage our child, I guess, in a sense, in the way that they should go? I mean, what are some maybe specific ways in which that encouragement should look like?
Well, see, in that great proverb, many of us tend to think that that's a moral statement, you know, help them to do the moral things that they should do. But really what it speaks to is the individuality of the child. And you know what? If you have a boy, think about, and this book, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, goes into great detail about what it means to be a boy, not just in the macho, you know, sports, break things, be tough sort of way, but the more artistic and creative ways and the more quiet ways. But pay attention to your child, the little boy. What's his sensibility? What is his temperament? The girl, is she aggressive? Is she more reticent? Is she a girly girl or not? Pay attention to that, and that is the child that God has given you to raise. And so raise them in the way that they should go. Don't try to take your artistic boy and make him, you know, a tough, robust guy. Notice those skills and raise those skills and tell him that you're proud of him and help him to do those things in a manly, male sort of way, and help him to understand that he is just as male as, you know, the quarterback on the team, but also for the quarterback on the team, the guy. Help him to be more thoughtful towards people. Help him to maybe learn how to sit and read books and, you know, that those things are good. Same thing with the girls. If you've got a competitive girl and she's awesome at soccer, encourage that in her. Encourage, you know, let her know that nothing should keep you down. That you have all the ability in the world. You can become anything that you want to be. And to be competitive in that way. But the same, if you've got a girl and she's frilly and she's pink and likes to be that kind of girl, encourage her to be the very best that she can. Teach her about modesty, teach her about her own beauty, and help her to understand her beauty in a good and healthy way. And this is what it comes down to for me, and you can hear it in what I'm saying, is there's very different ways to be a good boy and a good man. Not every good man or every good boy fits in a particular box, a stereotypical box, unfortunately. And the same thing with every girl. There are different kinds of girls, and we can encourage our girls, given the wiring that God gave them, to be the girl, to be the woman that God has created them to be.
You can raise secure, confident kids in a gender-confused world. Great help available from Glenn Stanton. His wonderful book, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. Have a couple of copies to give away, and we'll do a drawing for that here at the top of the hour. You can sign up for that with a phone call, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. If you have a question or comment, too, we'd love to have you join the conversation. Glenn's director for Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family. He's authored several books. This is one that we're referencing today, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. Love to have you join the conversation, 877-93-FAITH. Stay tuned. That's a classic from Phyllis Craig and Dean, and it's certainly appropriate as we talk today about raising secure, confident kids in a gender-confused world. And there's no question that we are in a time of much focus and emphasis and attack on how God has wired us and how we can help raise our kids to be secure daughters, confident sons, how parents guide their children into authentic masculinity and femininity. That is our conversation today. That book is written by Glenn Stanton, one of several he's written. He's written Why Marriage Matters, The Ring Makes All the Difference, My Crazy Imperfect Christian Family, and others. He's contributed to books like Same-Sex Marriage, The Moral and Legal Debate. Does a great deal of research, travels around the country, speaking on issues related to gender, sexuality, marriage, parenting. And we're glad to have him with us today. Glenn, one of the quotes in your book caught my attention. You're talking about boys and young men, and this quote caught my attention. The primary problem in any community throughout history is the undisciplined, unattached male. And as I was reading that, or just, you know, hearing reports about another young, 18-year-old arrested in England, you know, after trying to set off a bomb. I mean, we have bombs waiting to go off, it seems like, in a lot of young males. What's up with that?
Well, that quote is very, very important, and it hits a lot of people as weird. But if we think about this, you know, if we're stuck on an island and we have to start creating our culture, and we will need to find a way to corral male energy and sexuality. Women are not as inclined to, you know, be sexual opportunist in that sense. If they are, it's driven by the male. But female sexuality, if you will, and not just the, you know, the behavior, but the whole essence of things, is really pro-social. It is good for the community. It settles things down. It gets us to remember our manners and things like that. Male energy is not that way. You know, you think about a frat house, you know, a house full of young men. You don't get the idea of, well, these are civilized, you know, drinking tea with their pinkies sticking out and, you know, things like that. That every society needs a way to settle down male energy and male sexuality. And the way that it does that, first of all, is with good parenting and good fatherhood. Fathers teaching their boys, you know what, son, take it easy. Don't treat another one like that. You know, don't treat another person like that. But also, as the little boy grows older, that's also done through marriage. Marriage is the social relationship that gets the male to settle down. What's interesting, and I just did this research recently, is the word matrimony means obligation to the mother. The, you know, a man gets married because he needs to be responsible for his, you know, amorous behavior. And if something happens and a new little baby comes along, the man has to, quote unquote, do right by the woman. And every society has that need for men to settle down, for them to become, if you will, domesticated and socialized. And good fatherhood and good marriage is the way to do that. You think about the communities in our culture where fatherhood has declined, where marriage has declined, the outcomes of those things, particularly for the young men, is not good.
Has feminist ideology worked against maybe a woman's abilities or need to domesticate the man, or certainly, you know, maybe her need for security and other things?
Yeah, you know what, Neil? I mean, that's the big, big irony with feminism. The great writer from way back, G.K. Chesterton, he said the whole effort of feminism is not to be feminine in any way. I love that quote. And what they are saying is, you know what, negate or deny your feminine nature and play the game on the male's terms, sexually, business, you know, academically, things like that. But they fail to realize that it really is the feminine, the woman, the girl that shapes and molds culture. Think about this. Manners exist because women exist. Women demand. I mean, it's interesting that if you see a group of, you know, kind of guys and they're in a room and they're telling, you know, body jokes or things like that, and one woman or one girl walks into the room, just by her sheer presence, she changes the nature of it. And the feminists are not realizing the incredible power that every female person has to change the community around them. And women, being feminine women and not apologizing for it, really do shape and control the nature of men. Ask any group of men married 10 years, 15 years or more, if their wife made them a better man. They will laugh, and not because it's a silly question, but because it's an obvious question. Of course they have. And they're not just being polite. They know that this woman in their life has made them more responsible, more conscious, more compassionate to other people, harder workers, more diligent, things like that. Women make men better people. And that is a profound, not just responsibility. It's not their responsibility. They just do it. But it is a great sense of power. I mean, no other being in society has that kind of power.
Wow. That's a good summary. I was thinking, as you were talking about, the moms there, I mean, because I know you talk about how, you know, moms and dads complement each other as they discipline or comfort differently or influence differently. But how can, maybe say a word about moms to encourage their boys? What would be your message to moms, to their sons, and then we'll talk dads to their daughters?
You know, it's very, very good because moms are that sense of comfort. You know, you see a little boy or a little girl when they're young, they get hurt. Who do they go to? They go to mom. But moms also need, and it's hard for them, but they also need to understand that as your boy grows, it's this phrase, cut the apron strings. And that has a negative connotation towards men. Or towards mothers of, you know, hanging on and you know, pampering their kids. But moms need to understand that as the child ages from 5, 6, 7, 8, mom needs to push them toward the dad and to say, he's the one that you need to start identifying with. You know what? If you need some help, go ask dad. He'll help you. And so the mother, not alienating the boy, but just simply saying, you know, pointing the boy in dad's direction. And now dads with little boys need to pull boys to them. They will never help a good little boy become a man by shaming them and saying, hey, you need to step it up. Mother pushes the child in the boy's direction, and the dad takes the boy and welcomes him and brings him to him. Now, you said dads do not need to, you know, kind of push their daughters in the direction of mom. That's a whole different thing. Dads, and I have hated it and it's been difficult with my four daughters, I've had to come to realize I can't hug them. I can't wrestle with them. I can't treat them as they're becoming women like I used to. But I do still need to be there in their life to encourage them, to tell them that they're smart, to tell them that they're able, to tell them that they can do anything in the world that they want to do, but also to tell them that they're beautiful. And to not necessarily highlight the obvious beautiful things about them, but the beautiful things that I see as a man that other people may not see and that they may not see, to give our daughters that encouragement. What I love to see and say is when you see a confident woman out in the world making a difference, not having to apologize for her femininity, you can tell that woman was well-fathered because women primarily get their confidence out in the world by the way that they were fathered.
Wow. Which just brings up the issue if you're in a single-parent home, this adds some complication to this, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And I talk about that in the book, especially single moms with little boys, that, you know, she may think, well, I don't have anything to offer my little boy, but you do. First of all, you know, uncles and grandfather, you know, you can push the boy in that direction and say, look at Uncle Jim and look at Grandpa. But the other thing that mom can do on sort of a daily basis, and I don't encourage them to do it daily, but as you encounter good men in the community, say, you know, the guy who comes and fixes our, you know, plumbing, he's a good man. He always shows up on time. He's always polite. He always cleans up after himself. When you're watching TV with your little boy, talk about the good men and talk about the bad men. What makes that man a bad kind of man? And not just that he's the criminal, but that he doesn't follow through with what he says he's going to do. Or the good man, he doesn't try to act so macho. He doesn't have anything to prove. And so that moms, even though you don't have a dad in the home, there are men all around that you, mom, can say, that's the kind of man that I respect. And your child, your little boy, will strive to become that kind of man.
I thought, too, just I'd kind of forgotten, but as I was rereading the book, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, that you do talk about several movies and opportunities. Obviously, those are very influential in our young children's lives. And to find those, because so many messages are counter, we need to celebrate the good ones that really will honor what it means to be a masculine or feminine person.
And that's exactly right. And I think one of the best examples for little boys is the Andy Griffith Show. I mean, Andy is just a good man. You know, he always did what was right, but he wasn't the sort of gunslinging macho man either.
Yeah. Good. Good reminder. Should we push like gender specific toys? We got young kids. I mean, you know, we all love playing with dolls, maybe at different stages in the life. So what about issues like that?
You know what? That's a good question. And to push gender, you know, non-specific toys is you don't have to. It's interesting that Target a number of years ago said, yeah, we're going to mix up all the boy and girl toys and we're not going to have a boys aisle and a girls aisle. And it's like, I mean, one, that's so silly because guess what? The boys are going to go to the boy toys. The girls are going to go to the girl toys. And boys and girls are inclined to go that way. But we need to understand when our children are little, four and below, they will play with all kinds of different toys. My little boy, we had these, you know, Emerald Dorothy slippers, and he loved to wear those little slippers around the house. And, you know, did that kind of freak me out? Yeah. But you know what? He's 2 years old. He'll, you know, kind of come to the place, and I don't need to shame him in wearing those little shoes, but say, you know, gosh, those, fireman rain boots, they're pretty cool too. Or, you know, look at these cowboy boots. You know, understanding that when they're in those ages early, they're not quite sure identified with what they are, and it's not a big thing to them. But as they grow, we typically see our boys and little girls, you know, move in different sort of ways. I was doing some research recently about Legos. Little boys play with Legos, girls not as inclined, but Legos came out with these little community things. And, you know, the little girls and they're pink and they're about the home and things like that. And girls love them because they're more inclined in that area.
Hey, we just a minute left here before we speaking of research. I know you're researching all the time. If people want to find out more about the writing and the studies and the speaking that you're doing, what's the best way to connect?
A lot of the good research that I have now and most recent, they can find it. It's at our Focus on the Family website, focusonthefamily.org. But they can also just simply Google focus and findings, those two words, and that takes you immediately to my website where a lot of this research is. But I would encourage them also, they can get the book Secure Daughters, Confident Sons that has all this information in it.
Great resource and wonderful information. As always, Glenn Stanton writes and speaks on issues of gender, sexuality, marriage, parenting. And you can find him at focusonthefamily.org or his website. Just search Focus and Findings. And the book we've referenced, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, got a couple of copies to give away. We'll do that here at the top of the hour. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. Glenn, good to visit with you. Thanks for the work that you're doing and for being a voice in the confusion that we're surrounded in these days.
Neil, happy to do it, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Glenn Stanton joining us today here on Connecting Faith. Not long ago, I had a chance to talk with Sam Andriatis about his wonderful book, Engendered, God's Gift of Gender Difference in Relationship, and we're going to share a clip of that right now. He said the key is relationship.
That's what gender is about. It's about relationship. So when you lose gender in relationships, you lose gender. So the current transgender movement and widespread gender dysphoria that we're witnessing was entirely predictable. When people don't know who they are in relationship, they start to lose what it is to be a man or what it is to be a woman, all the while adopting cultural stereotypes that are wrong and thinking that's what gender is and they don't fit in. And so gender confusion is only going to increase now. And what will come next, Neil, is widespread body modification. That's the next step in the disintegration of God's image.
We will come back and talk more about that in a moment. I guess maybe we need to go back a bit, though, and talk about why is gender linked to relationships? What is it about relationship that we need to understand here?
Sure. Well, you know, most of us, if we think about what it is that makes a man or what it is that makes a woman, we have some kind of essential quality in mind that women tend to be empathetic or men tend to, you know, like football. And this is not the way that the Bible talks about gender. When the Bible brings up gender, the biblical writers always bring it up in terms of relationship. And it goes back to the very beginning. When God creates man and says, I'm going to make man, male and female, shall I make them? He's talking about making mankind in his image. Well, what does that mean? Well, if we look at who God is, as the Bible unfolds, we find out that he's Trinity in unity, that God is three in one. So we came out gendered because we're reflecting something of what God is themselves. God has community within himself, the three in one. And so you have different persons who are equal but different coming together in relationship. And that's why he gave us the gift of gender.
You use the word asymmetry just to help us understand, you know, that's what the three syllables. That might be more than some of us normally use. <in there. laughs>
Yeah, it's a big word, but it's and you know, you probably didn't use it since you got out of high school geometry.
I'm thinking so, yeah.
Right, yeah. But I use that word because it just captures very well how God created these two equal image bearers. Both men and women are equal in the sense of reflecting God's image. But when he brings them together, just because there's equality between them doesn't mean that they love each other the same way. They actually love each other asymmetrically. And when the New Testament writer, Paul, looks at Genesis 2 and that story of the creation of gender, he highlights three different features of the narrative to tell us this is how we are to be different to one another in relationship, and those are the contours that help us to know how it is that we're men, how it is that we're women. So when what you're pointing out here is a kind of yin yang. I guess I'm not sure I want to use that term because people might think I'm talking about another religion, but there is a kind of alternating the way that men and women are brought together, or as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11, literally, woman is not apart from man, and man is not apart from woman. And usually the translators have tried to smooth that out by translating it as, well, women are not independent of men and men are not independent of women, which is good, but literally it's even more raw. It's more, you don't have men apart from women. You don't have women apart from men, because we find the definition in each other in coming into relationship and loving each other. So these kinds of pairings should direct us away from a kind of idea of what the world thinks of gender as is some kind of, you know, you're a man if you go out into the woods and you cut yourself with stones, or you're a woman if you like to go shopping, or if you're afraid of mice. This is not the way the Bible talks about it. It talks about us with each other.
Do we get maybe gender and sexuality confused, right? Or maybe we blurred the lines today. Make that distinction for us.
Yes. When we look at it at the beginning, when God creates on his days of creation, well, we notice that there are animals who exist before man is brought along, and these animals have sexual differences, but something happens on the sixth day that's different. His last work, the crown of creation, men and women in his image, is unique, and physical sexual difference existed before that in plants and animals, but this is new. This is gender. It's uniquely human, and we need to recognize that when God creates us in his image, gender is something that's different than just physical differences. Physical differences are the platform on which he creates gender, but gender is a call to be in the image of God. So if we don't realize this, we can make mistakes. If we think that it's sexual difference is gender, then we don't see that male-female sexual differences sometimes overlap. So what's typical for a female, like being nurturing or being shorter, sometimes shows up in a male instead. And God loves this kind of variety. But if we think that the typical sexual trait is what makes a woman, then we can mess people up and exclude people by our expectations, because you're not less of a man if you happen to be shorter. And a woman who excels in martial arts is not less of a woman. And a man with an eye for decorating who can't grow a mustache, it doesn't mean he's less of a man. And it's essential for the Church of Jesus Christ to realize this and embrace the exceptional for the Church's benefit as well as the individual's. Because when the exceptional are excluded, then the developmental problems come in and hinder them into their lives, and we lose out too.
Is it really a problem if we sort of color outside the lines, if you will, and cross these gender boundaries? I mean, what is it, just because it says something in Genesis 2, or are there better reasons?
Yes, well, just to return to that previous question about confusing sexual difference with gender difference that we were talking about, if your gender is just your genitalia, then medical procedures have gotten quite good these days. So if you have the money and the inclination, because you're uncomfortable with some parts of yourself, you can start to believe that you can just change it. If you have the hormone treatment and you have the sex reassignment operation, then you could change your gender. And that's not the case at all. According to the Scriptures, we're called, gender is a calling to be in the image of God, and God gives us this gift to call us forward in relationship. So we can't actually just go and change it, even if we're uncomfortable with our own definitions.
Before we get to those questions, I guess, say a bit about what does it mean to be a true woman? What does it mean to be a true man? Is it about doing or being?
Well, I think it's both, in that God creates on the platform of a sexual difference, but the gender that we are is really a call to love the other gender in relationship. So when the Bible talks about gender distinction, it's much clearer on action than on essence. The Bible doesn't say, you know, man, you are this, or woman, you are this. It says, man, do this for her, and woman, do this for him. So a lot of the ways in which the culture might say, well, this is how you're a man, you know, you like to go to the hardware store, or this is how you're a woman, you know, you're afraid of mice, or you like romantic comedies. This is not the way the Bible talks. Instead, it talks about us finding out who we are as men and women by doing what God calls us to in relationship.
Just a short segment, excerpt from a wonderful conversation I had with Sam Andreades, who's a senior pastor and authored a great book called Engendered, God's Gift of Gender Difference in Relationship. You could hear that full conversation or the full conversation I had with Glenn Stanton from earlier today. You find both of those We'll post them on our website. You go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, and you'll be able to listen to those conversations again, pass them on to a friend at myfaithradio.com, and click on Connecting Faith. Looking forward to having you join us again tomorrow as we talk about real issues of the day from a faith perspective. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. And you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.